Oh no, there is a little pause thing. I didn't know it was there. I go figure. Okay, noontime constitutional. Out walking. Got my five fingers on. Doing stuff. Writing is really an interesting process for me. And anyway. I think I need my hat out of that all. Partly cloudy. And it's right at 70. It's about the perfect temperature for nearly anything. And yeah, I love the fall on my hat. Keep it off. So yeah, I was writing this morning and as much as during these recordings, I'll go wandering off onto tangents. That's why I got out of the habit of doing a topic for recordings, because I would always wander off somewhere else, and it was just really obvious that I was wandering off. And what's the point of making it obvious? And you go, J. Meanders, you know, you should almost call it the meanderings. Because that's all I'm doing. But yeah. And it kind of happens with my writing too, you know. I go ahead and write everything in ebook form, even though I can take it off of there and plug it in someplace else. And, it's perfectly, and I'll start with the topic that I want to talk about and start writing, and it'll ultimately become something else. Now, let me tell you, my writing finds itself so much, I think, more quickly than my talking does. And I write so much more coherently than I talk. How about that? And, you know, I think I honestly, my stream of consciousness comes out better writing. Interesting, because I remember in the Book of Mormon, like that whole group was always constantly saying, no, our speaking is much more powerful than our writing. And I've always felt like I went the other way. But the impression from the Book of Mormon is that it's kind of a cultural thing. You know, they all tended to kind of be this way. And that we weren't really getting the best stuff. Although, it seems like Mormon took the chance to do a whole lot of, you know, to transcribe a lot of speeches, you know, and I don't know if that's a particularly Jewish thing or if that was just a Nephite thing. But there it really is, you know. I guess we don't get any impression that Isaiah, for instance, was a magnificent speaker, you know. It seems like he writes a lot. He's much more crafty. When you're speaking, as far as I'm aware of, it's difficult to craft because you just have to keep going. You know, you can't go back and go, well, we edit this. This is what we wanted. And, so yeah. I started writing this morning, and kind of trying to write about the fact that, well, it actually got down to writing about the difference between being oriented toward the state and being oriented toward the individual, which is really the only two ways that really hold sway right at the moment. It seems like, I don't know if it's a cultural American thing or if it's just about people in general, that it's kind of difficult for them to have, you know, three or four different things to look at, you know. You have to make a clear choice, so you have to have your side and the other side. You know, your side is wonderful and marvelous and fantastic, and you're going to defend it till the end of time. Or the other side that you're going to castigate and shoot holes in and is, you know, Satan, evil, wicked, nasty, demonic thing forever. And the fact that I think there's kind of a line drawn, everybody has to kind of make their decision as to where on this line it is. I chose to put it as state versus individual, and that these two forces are constantly at, you know, grappling with each other. It's always a question of which way it's going. If you look at life that way, it becomes pretty obvious that the state's winning right now, you know. The individual is being lost to a desire to give over stuff to the state. You know, especially in the way of terrorism, it's big. No one person or small group of people can get together and really protect you against terrorism. So, you know, the state says, hey, but we can, because we're that big. We can do that stuff, although I think it's a little questionable whether whether it's really doing something about it, or whether it's simply taking credit for the fact that the terrorists just aren't really busy right now. You know, other things are happening. You know, it's really kind of a win-win situation. If a terrorist attack comes, the state goes, oh, yes, this is why you need the state so much, is to fend off terrorists. See, can't you see? You have no ability to protect against it, only we do. Or they can say, look, there hasn't been a terrorist attack in a year or two, maybe. And so, boy, isn't all this wonderful security? Isn't the government getting involved in every single aspect of your life? Isn't that wonderful? Because, look, you haven't had a terrorist attack. And if you start saying things like, well, we haven't heard about a terrorist attack, or we haven't heard that you've actually foiled one. Well, you know what? It's really no problem at all to kind of make one up. Oh, there was this guy, and he was over here, and we knew he was going to do this, so we stopped him and saved all you people's lives. I am, by nature, a bit skeptical. And so I struggle a whole lot with you know, with the whole attitude of trust me. I don't do that. I'm not a trusting person particularly. You know, I mean, to a certain degree you have to be. You have to go through life. You have to drive your car. was driving down the street, and there was somebody who was going into the crosswalk, and I stopped. That's the law in the United States, is that pedestrians have the right of way. If they're in a crosswalk, they can just proceed along the crosswalk, and the cars have to stop and wait for them to get through the crosswalk. Well, then the people started waving at me like crazy, telling me to go. I was just sitting there ruminating about the fact, I don't know, I don't think I was even upset. But it was like, I'd already stopped, go, you know. And it isn't even the point of being nice, it was just being ignorant of the law. They didn't know what their job was. Of course, the motor vehicle law, most people don't know most of the motor vehicle laws, even the ones that have licenses don't know the motor vehicle laws. So, it's interesting. It's interesting. Anyway, there's tough riding. And, the original title was Locus Power. I changed it ultimately to State versus, or State and Individual. But, you know, the whole thing that I was doing in that whole thing was just trying to get to a point where I said, now I'm going to introduce this whole other thing called family. Which, in some strange way, stands in between the individual and the state. I think it kind of stands between the individual and everything else. A lot of people ask the government to perform duties that have traditionally been done by the family. And I think individuals have turned towards the government because they have to understand before a government could really effectively even attempt to step in as a family replacement, the family didn't really have any other, didn't have any competition. See, that can sound that it sounds like it's some kind of fight going on. It's not really. Because government is a bad substitute for family. You know? It does do a good job. It, you know, it can't deal with individual circumstances very well at all. Individual circumstances are too expensive. Families can handle individual problems. For families, a lot of things that families do don't enter into, like, the money stream, for instance, you know. One doesn't take a look at the cost. Where to government, everything is looked at in the monetary way. You know? The government that has lots of money can provide lots of services. And one of the things that individuals like about the government is the government doesn't really ask a lot of questions or doesn't make a lot of demands on the individual. So, it'll set up some criteria for participating in a program. But that criteria can shift a lot. Perhaps even more than it does the family. Family, I've always considered family to be a superior thing because it asks something of its individual members. I think it's able to give a lot more than the government can or would be willing to do. Because government has to be fair. Families don't have to be fair. families can behave themselves pretty much how they like. The really nice thing is most families, the individual members in them, at least on some level, love each other. And what's the best for each other? You know, you always hear stories of all these families, horrible things. Those are acceptable stories. Now when it comes to the state or government doing things to people, if you see evidence that it's doing something to one person, you can expand that out and say, chances are, it's doing it to many people. In fact, typically, in governmental circles, it's doing it to nearly everybody. You know, and you can decide whether that's good or whether that's bad or whatever. And, and the real battle ends up being for family, and that's where it comes all the time from the family ascendancy. Who should be more important in the lives of individuals? The first thing you have to know about an individual person is that they cannot make it by themselves. One person can't do everything that needs to be done. You know, one person cannot typically do all that needs to be done, you know, in raising a child. One person cannot do that. There has to be this whole fleet of other people coming around, you know, either paid or unpaid, to come and help. And it's not to denigrate people. It's just to view a reality. It's simply the way it is. Can't be done. You know. And a single person who's well-educated or who has a high-paying job can think that they can do it all because they can pay all these people to take care of things. You know, I've got a nanny, they take care of my child, you know, I've got a cook, they cook and clean for me, or we go out to eat on a regular basis. You know, we as individuals are not little islands. The family really becomes the one entity that really can be a bit of an island. You know, it can take care of almost all the needs of its members when they work together, when they divide labor, when they do all these things, especially if you have, you know, 3, 4, 5 children. That family can do just fine with very little help from the outside. Typically, they can handle almost all their day-to-day needs, period. And then, you know, and the great part is they're also quite capable of, you know, creating larger entities. You know, two families is a little more decent, you know. Your sons marry their daughters and everything's kind of copacetic that way. But, you know, the whole concept of Adam and Eve, this was brother marrying sister and having children. I think you have to have better genetic stock than what we can currently come up with. you know. But the family really ends up being the basic autonomous unit. And you have to understand that nobody's autonomous. I'm sorry, countries can't manage autonomy. So when people say, well, yeah, but you need other people too, and you're going, nobody's disputing that, but don't start flouting something else as being able to fill that role better than the family. Nothing can. Nothing can. And the point is that when it comes to what has the locus of power, what has the locus of control, what has the locus of attention, what has the locus of interest, where should the bulk of all these things center, where should it be placed if we're going to have even the ability to say that we can, that we even have the ability to place it where we choose, it should be in the family. The natural nuclear family is really the basis of these things. Because it really ends up being the only consistent creator of surplus. You know, the only thing that can not only provide for needs, but can also have a surplus beyond what is needed to, you know, give up in taxes, to invite a neighbor kid over to eat with them. You know, these things are surpluses. You can do these things. You know, it really becomes the first entity that can really do that in a consistent way. And I'm not saying that rich people who are single, maybe don't even have children, but have lots of money, don't also contribute on some level to the surplus. Sadly, they don't really contribute to the surplus very much, because what really ends up being important isn't money. You know, it ends up being so much more children, raising children, keeping life going, perpetuating culture and society in whatever way you choose to do so. If you translate everything down into money, which is doable, you can do that. The single person who's well educated and goes out and gives and throws themselves at money making opportunities can generate a lot of money. A lot more than what they need to survive. But when it comes to the larger view of things, you know, there's so many things that person can't do. What does he need to do? And you make a decision about what you're going to spend your time on, what you're going to get yourself into, things like that. objective to it could get a lot of like an orphanage to the point to where they practically own the orphanage so that they could transmit what values they felt like transmitting through that. But honestly, it can't be the center of what they do because it really is a product of the money that they make. They can't, you know, they can't say, well, I run an orphanage. And, you know, if they weren't doing something else that made a lot of money, running an orphanage doesn't make money, you know. Families, like I said before, don't live and die by some kind of financial basis, like, say, for instance, an orphanage would. Orphanages come up and they go down, you know, by an economic thing. Families don't. Families are much more cohesive. They stay together. Even when money's bad, they tend to stay together. At least in a common interest. Tell stories sometimes of a father and his son going off away from the mother and the daughters to, you know, get work and to make money so that they can do things or to get their children better opportunities, to send them off to college, do something along that, along those lines. And it's really difficult to say, but that's a good thing to do. I know a lot of people would disagree with that. To say, you know, was that the right thing to do? Is that the right thing to sacrifice for? Sacrifice for your children, you know, education. I would have to say that. And as much as you can go off and gain better opportunities by changing your location, probably isn't as, it probably doesn't have the same impact as keeping the family together. And working diligently together toward a common goal. That ends up being the most important thing, is the common goal. You know, it needs to be something that everybody believes in. Really wants to see. That's a family goal to share. And we work toward that. Both Lisa and I are college educated. Lisa went to 3 years of college and got an associate's degree in interior design. I went to 4 years of college and got a bachelor's degree in home economics. And opportunity. Now, I, you know, whether my children choose to access that or not is, to a large extent, to them. You know, I don't have resources myself to pay for their college. You know, I don't make that kind of money. Lisa and I consciously made a choice very early in our marriage that I would go and I'd make the money and she would stay home and you know, manage family and children. All the day-to-day things that need to be done. And that's worked for us. You know, do I tell other people that's the way it should be done? I don't know. I think it's a better way. I think it's a good division of labor. How about that? For being a really pathetic response to what I'm trying to say, I guess. That we're actually able to do more than other people are able to do. At least we are able to do more of what we would like to do than I think most other people are able to. Of course, I'm finding out that as our younger kids are going back to public schools, demands of that circumstance really are interesting. You know, the school demands a lion's share of family time. I remember writing an essay a while back about that. That's a saving of family time like nobody's business was being homeschooled, or house was wonderful because it just got down to the nuts and bolts of education. You didn't have all the other stuff, all the other crap that was required. You went once a week for half a day or a whole day, you know, and then you come home. And I really liked that. Sadly, it seems a tough standard for kids to live up to, which is sad because I don't think it should be a difficult standard. But sadly, you know, I can't say much because, frankly, I don't have to live up to that standard anymore. So I don't know if I'm really, I don't feel comfortable saying what can and cannot work, what can and cannot happen. So, anyway, we got all kinds of interesting circumstances going on. I'm not really sure what else to call it. And I personally think it would be really fantastic if my kids could still do house again. I really do like the whole house model. I like it much better than anything else. You know, it throws aside the whole concept of schooling is basically investing the time into high school diploma being an actual display of what you can do. You know, for most schools, your college diploma is only a mark of some sort of matriculation. It's slowly trying to become something more. You know, there's more tests now that have to be passed. You know, it ends up becoming more of a political thing, you know. Kind of like a successful family is measured by how much money it brings in, how many toys it can have, stuff like that, which I don't know what that's supposed to measure, you know. You could say, oh, you know, a family's a failure if it doesn't put all of its kids through college somehow. You know, and I don't know if that's truly a measure of that, because every family gets a value. What it wants to do. Yes, and in a world where the family is not ascendant, where a family is not the locus of power of control of things like that, you know, whatever externality ends up taking that locus of power, whether it's the government, whether it's keeping up with the Joneses sort of thing, whether it's, you know, a set of movies or a set of books that kind of set some kind of standard. You know, it sits there and it dictates the family what it wants to see, and when the family either chooses not to or can't fit that model, then, you know, then what happens, you know? What kind of action is taken against that circumstance? If nothing to do with it, the family need would be miracles. If the family would do what it desires, it would either fall apart or it would change its character. Hopefully, as a group. So the most important thing is, and the most, you know, we talk about doctrines and about ways to do the ones that are to societal force on families. Good. Because hopefully that's a lifting thing. You know, and you would say, let's see if we can make this kind of life happen. And I don't know. I can't, and each individual family makes that decision. It's bad to make judgment calls. I know this one family who has always seemed to be in dire straits, seems to have a problem with budget, with managing their budget. It doesn't seem to be a high priority for them. and their oldest son, they just sent off to college. And there was no, never got any sense of how it was going to happen. You know, they just did it. I don't know if they're just taking out loans and that's it. You know, go and take out loans, that's what you do. I don't know even what he's studying. And, where in my family, it would be, you know, it's really, really very treacherous right now because of money. And I would be telling my daughter, you know, get what education you can at the institution you can afford. And then go from there. You know, or do it online, or, you know, there's several options these days that tend to be less expensive, that make it so that you can afford to do something. You know, I think I was born in a semi-blessed time. I don't remember us going deep in debt for education. I took out a loan, but I seemed to, well, Lisa and I differ on this, so there's no point talking about it. We went into a little bit of debt, but it wasn't sizable at all. And it was paid back in short order. You know, I'm tempted. Well, I have to tell my daughter just to go to a local school and get busy. So, you know, you have this year off. So I don't know what this year off, you know, you didn't do anything with it. And you go, that's probably, that, you know, you just got a year older. So I, you know, you didn't go and get some kind of an enrichment thing. You didn't do anything. You worked. And you didn't work very much, honestly. So I don't mean to be rude, but you could have easily taken college classes and not missed anything. Maybe I'll tell her that it's a good idea to go and register at Mesa Lands and just get ready to go to college there at the first of the year. So you can get to it. This is, I'm sure there are still scholarships. There's a lot of scholarships that she just lost. You know, and that's okay. That's life. You don't get weird about opportunities you didn't take. You look forward and see what the opportunities are ahead of you. Oh, I don't know. So, but yeah, you know, that's for families to consider, to look at. What is important for the family? Is it staying together? Is it taking care of each other? Doing things like that? Those may be the most important things beyond anything else. You know, and that you can pretty much tell society where to stop it. And there is the actual end to it, is to do those things. And to have a happy life. And to be good and to do good. I mean, those are the things that we need to worry about more. Anyway, so this is Jason Nero. I'm just ready to go. Have a great day.